julas tilbud hos Spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribber fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alt I tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.
What if every symptom that your physiology was revealing was guiding you back to your most authentic self? And what if you could ask the right questions so you could interpret the symptoms as on the way, not in the way, and thank your physiology for guiding you to something great?
Hei dere, velkommen til oss. Vi Biohacking Girls, din podcast for optimal helse.
Vi to jenter bak rattet. Dette Monica.
Og dette Alette. Vi biohacking-kollegaer og legger sammen våre erfaringer og kunnskap for å inspirere deg til å ta fatt på biohacking for å optimalisere helsen din.
Vi følger med og setter forstørrelsesglass på trender og siste forskning og snakker med verdens toppeksperter innen trening, life coaching, helse og biohacking.
Du klar for å starte med konkrete hacks, lytte til din egen kropp og ta fatt på din helsemessige reise sammen med oss?
Vi ønsker naturlig tilnærming til helsen vår, og vi snakker til både menn og kvinner.
Du kan gjerne gi tilbakemeldinger til oss under podcasten her, og slå gjerne til med en god stjerne.
Du finner oss også på Instagram og Facebook. Du klar? Velkommen! De fleste av dere som lytter på podcasten, inkludert oss to, har nok sett filmen The Secret. Det en dokumentar og en selvhjelpsfilm om loven om tiltrekning, altså The Law of Attraction, som kom I 2006.
Denne filmen fokuserer på å inspirere seerne til å forstå at deres tanker, følelser og holdninger har en direkte innvirkning på hva de tiltrekker seg I livet.
Ja, og her kunne man lære mye mer om viktigheten av å være til stede og våken og bevisst og ja, klar på det man fokuserer på. Fordi at dette ville påvirke livserfaringene våre, alt vi gjør I livene våre, og hjelpe oss å nå de drømmene som vi lengter etter og målene.
Det jo dette med at det positive forsterker seg. Dette har jeg brukt siden jeg så The Secret, og det, jeg har brukt den på en ting, og det når det gjelder parkering. Hver gang jeg skal et eller annet sted hvor jeg skal finne en ledig parkeringsplass, så visualiserer jeg og ser denne parkeringsplassen for meg, og jeg må si, innimellom så funker det.
Denne filmen The Secret, den populariserte jo egentlig og gjorde det mye mer tilgjengelig at det, den ideen at hvis man tenker positivt, som du sier, og visualiserte dette, så kunne man tiltrekke seg ikke bare parkeringsplassen og lette, men også kanskje suksess og rikdom og lykke. Og jeg jo en sånn født optimist. Jeg tror alltid at det går bra, og at jeg finner parkering, og at jeg kommer fort frem I køen, men jeg... Ja, jeg jo sammen med noen pessimister og forteller som bare tenker at dette går dårlig, og vi kommer ikke til å rekke flyet, og vi mister bagasjen og sånt. Så det ligger jo litt I oss selv, og hvordan man ser og tolker verden.
Ja, det ligger selvsagt mer bak dette enn bare det å visualisere en parkeringsplass. Og I dag så skal vi møte Dr. John DeMartini, en av de mange ekspertene som deler sine synspunkter og som formidler dette budskapet I filmen. Han også en bestsellende forfatter, han foredragsholder og han coach og har hjulpet millioner av mennesker I å nå deres mål og drømmer.
Ja, I denne filmen så jo han en av de formidlerne som forklarer hva dette består av, dette med loven om tiltrekning, law of attraction, og hvordan det fungerer I praksis. Og kan man egentlig bruke denne til å manifestere de drømmene og de ønskene man har? Det virkelig real? Altså, vi har jo fokus på biohacking, og nysgjerrig på hvordan hans filosofi og kunskap kan brukes I dette feltet, så kan gi oss verdifulle svar. For meg jo interessert I biohacking, og få det best mulig på mange arenaer, ikke bare mat og trening, men også på de mulighetene og på det potensialet vi har som mennesker.
Tema for dagens podd sannheten bak hvem vi egentlig Vi skal snakke om traumer, sorg og angst, og det menneskelige potensialet. Og hvordan tankene våre kan være det største biohacket om vi klarer å bruke tankens kraft.
Så kjære lyttere, dere klare for en reise med Dr. John DeMartini? Velkommen til Girlsa, ukens podcast. Dear Dr. John DeMartini, we are really pleased to have you guesting our podcast. In Norway, the secret has been the most known thing about you and your career. So I think we just to place you on the map so the listeners can understand who you are. What do you think the secrets have contributed for the audience around the world?
Well, I'm an educator, and for 52 years, that's what I've been doing. And around 2006, I was blessed to be asked by Rhonda Byrne, who is the producer of the movie The Secret in the book, if I'd participate. And I was very inspired by the idea, and I had been involved in some of the topics that were being displayed in this movie. And so it was a great opportunity for me to add my bit into that movie, some small little contribution. But I really believe that the magnificence of who we are is far greater than any fantasies we'll ever impose on ourselves. And the secret is some of the steps that people can use to empower and achieve what's inside their heart they want to bring to the world, the difference they want to make. We certainly have the capacity to do something extraordinary if we give ourselves permission and we apply the principles and the actions that have been demonstrated through the world and through history. So I think that it's in line with what I've been trying to contribute since 1972.
Amazing. So what is actually the law of attraction?
Well, there's more grounded versions. I'd like to start with that first. Our brain has sensory receptors. Our peripheral nervous system has sensory receptors. They go into the spinal cord and go ascend up the spinal cord and go up to the thalamus, which is a relay station to go to the cortex. And this thalamus filters out information based on what you value most. So if you're a mother, 35 years old with 5 kids under 5, and you walk in a mall, if your highest value is those beautiful children and you feel that you're dedicated as a mother, you will filter out of the infinitude of information that you're bombarded by, the information that allows you to help you maximize the contribution to the children's lives. You'll see children's items, children's education, children's entertainment, children's clothes. You'll see things that allow you to fulfill what your dream is and what is most meaningful to you. Somebody else who has a high value on business will walk in the mall and see a completely different mall. They will filter things out. They'll have attention surplus order for things that are valuable and attention deficit disorder for things that aren't. So we literally, based on our values, are filtering our reality and giving us advantages or disadvantages accordingly. And if we set goals and objectives that are congruent and aligned with what we value most, we're able to filter out and see those beautiful synchronicities. And the law of attraction is that our innermost dominant thought becomes our outermost tangible reality. We see things, hear things, smell things, taste things, feel things that are congruent with what we value most, and we tend to not see all those other things. So when we're living congruent according to what we value most, we are able to see the synchronicities and see how the opportunities surround us. But if we're trying to be somebody we're not inauthentically, we're not able to see those. When people say, you know, I've done The Secret and it really helps me, it's because they've been congruent. When they say, well, it's not seeming to work for me, it's because they're fantasizing about things that aren't really congruent with who they are, and they're trying to be something inauthentic, and the world is trying to give them feedback to get them authentic, because that's where they excel. And so the law of attraction, just from a neurophysiological perspective, is trying to help us live authentically according to what's truly most meaningful and important to us, and to set goals that are congruent. If we fill our day with high priority actions that inspire us, it doesn't fill up with low priority distractions, it don't. And we're designed to set real objectives that are true. When I have people that watch the movie come up to me and said, you know, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I've watched the movie 20 times. I've read the book 5 times. But every day I go into my mailbox and I don't find a $1 million check. I go, have you considered contributing to people's lives through some sort of product, service, or idea that makes a difference that people value, that they'll pay for? You'll increase the odds of having wealth in your life. But living in a fantasy that somehow you're going to just manifest it, unless you've got some cousin, uncle, or aunt that's wealthy that wants to give you something, that's a little unrealistic. So you want to ground yourself and prioritize it. But there's also a more subtle thing. We now know in the brain that if we are authentic, we get gamma synchronicities and our brain synchronizes in the cortex. And we found out that when we do that, that synchronicity is not just within our own brain, but filters out into non-local regions and impact other people. I've spoken in conferences where there's 10,000 people. And if I'm present and I'm authentic and I'm inspired, there's not a dry eye in the room and there's a trance and there's a synchronicity in everybody's brains, including mine. And so when we are in a state of authenticity and synchronicity, we do have an impact and we do have a resonation. And we've now scientifically demonstrated that. That's scientifically proven that other brains synchronize. And so there is a resonation. And people, places, things, ideas, events that happen to resonate and match what our innermost dominant thought is tend to, you know, be drawn to us because everybody wants to be around authenticity. There's a yearning to want to be authentic in life. And so if you are, then you tend to draw people that help you fulfill your innermost dominant thought. Plus, there's also another level that I don't know we can explain yet in science. I was in the 1980s, I used to do consulting for doctors. I came to Norway, in fact, and Spain back in the 80s to Oslo. And what's interesting is we would used to do what they call file day. We take patients that are inactive, that have not been in the office for 6 months or longer, and we would take the staff, there might be 5 or 10 staff or more, and we would have them divvy up and divide up the various files of all the patient files that had not been seen. And we would just go through the files and think about the client, think about their condition, think about their family, think about their work, and just read their files and just study their files and just think about them. 20% of those people would either refer somebody, call, come in. I mean, it was consistently 20% across the board in probably 1,000 doctor's offices that I introduced this to. When your innermost dominant thought is your client and you can't wait to be of service to your client, they can't wait to receive the service you want to provide. And they would refer, they'd run into them, they'd show up in a restaurant with them, they'd show up at a grocery store, they'd drive by, they'd call, they'd refer. There'd be amazing synchronicities. So some of our science, I don't think, has quite reached the level of what we know intuitively. Because I think if you ask 1,000 people in a room, 10,000 people, how many of you have set a goal, read it every single day for maybe 2 weeks, and then notice these synchronicities of people and events and opportunities that showed up? And most everybody puts their hand up. It's too frequent to ignore, but not frequent enough to bet money on. But it's in that gray zone, but it's there. And you might as well capitalize on it because we've now discovered in science more and more of how and why it works. I'm sure in decades to come, we'll have even more awareness of how and why this is occurring. But it occurs. So take advantage of it in life. Dominate your thought on what is most inspiring and meaningful to your life. Fill your day with how you want it, and it's not likely to fill up with how you don't. It's as simple as that. If you don't plant flowers in the garden of your mind, you're going to pull weeds.
Is this the kind of process that happens when you think about somebody and they suddenly call? Is it more or less the same?
Well, if you ask any number of people, almost everybody will tell you they've had that happen. It's almost 100%. And I've actually had a situation. I was sitting at my parents' house a number of years back. I was thinking about somebody and I thought, I'm going to call Jackie. I don't know the technology and how this could occur. This is back in the time when the phones were just phones. There was no internet. And I called this guy on the phone. And when I picked up the phone and I started to dial, I connected to him and he was trying to connect to me. So, you know, did he think of me? Did I pick up on it? Did I think of him? Did he pick up on it? Did we both think of it at the same time? Is there something bigger than us making us think about it? I mean, these are all kind of questions, philosophical questions we could ask, but we synced at the same time to call each other. And many people that you think about suddenly send a text or suddenly send, I mean, I've had this week at least 3 or 4 of those, you know. I mean, I was thinking about somebody in Dubai the other day. I think I'm going to maybe come through Dubai. I'm going to make sure I contact him. So I wrote it down on a little piece of paper, one of these little pads, just a name to contact him. The following morning, I got an email. Now, I had slept and that email came in. That email was within 2 hours of me thinking about it before I went to bed. And they contacted me and said, I was thinking about you. Now, were they thinking of me and I picked up on it? Was I thinking of them? They picked up on it? I don't know. But this is the resonation that we have. And I don't want to ignore it. It's not easy to explain completely scientifically yet, but I do believe we have non-local communication with people that we care about and love.
So we have to talk more about that when we go into your method. But before that, we would like to just go back a little bit and see, talk a little about your life journey. What led you to this 50 plus year of experience, your lifestyle? You've been traveling a lot to Hawaii. You have 3 kids. Let's talk a little bit about your prehistory and background before we go further.
So the prehistoric caveman stage?
Yes, that's the one. We love that one.
I was born in Houston, Texas, 1954. I'm 70 here in 2 months. And when I was about a little over a year old, I was trying to stand up and I kept falling over. So I found out that I had an arm and leg that was turned inward. And so I had to wear braces on my arm and leg. And I found out I had a speech impediment. So I was going to a speech pathologist about age 1.5. And they did all these exercises with strings and buttons in my mouth to try to use muscle control and all kind of stuff. So I had a speech impediment and I had an arm and leg inwardly turned deformity. And everything in our life is on the way, not in the way, but we don't always see it initially. Because I'm a professional speaker today and I full-time travel and I wanted to be free from being constrained. So that's why the world is my home. Every country is a room in the house. When I got to first grade, I found out that I was dyslexic. My first grade teacher first put me in a normal reading class, then a remedial reading class, and then I had to wear a dunce cap with a guy named Daryl Dalrymple. And my parents came to the school and had a meeting with my teacher and said, I'm afraid your son is not going to ever be able to read or write, because I wrote backwards and I wrote this way, and dyslexia. And I don't think he's going to probably be very intelligent and be able to communicate effectively, go very far, amount to much. But he likes to run, because when I got out of the braces at 4, I just ran. Just wanted to run. So you might want to put him into sports. So I did. I got into sports. I made it through elementary school with the smartest kids. I liked this little Martha Rose Scartozzi Italian girl, and she was the smartest girl. And there's 2 guys that were really smart. And I befriended them and asked them questions, and then they would tell me what they learned in school, and that would allow me to get through the class to some degree. That worked until I was 12. My parents moved to Richmond, Texas, outside in the country in a small town where there's low socioeconomic and a lot of prejudice and racial issues. And I didn't have any smart kids. And so when I turned 12 and turned 13, I ended up dropping out of school and became a street kid. And Texas wasn't the surf capital, and I had picked up surfing when I was 9. And so at 14, I hitchhiked to California. I lived at the beach at 13 in Freeport, Texas. And at 14, I hitchhiked to California and down into Mexico. And I was a street kid surf bum. 15, I eventually panhandled enough money to get a flight to Hawaii. And I lived under a bridge and in a park bench and in a bathroom and finally an abandoned car. And I surfed on the North Shore, and I did quite well. I got in some surf movies and surf magazines and stuff. And then I nearly died at 17. In the recovery of that, I was led to a health food store and a yoga class. And at the yoga class was a special guest speaker named Paul C. Bragg. And Paul C. Bragg spoke 1 hour that night, and he was speaking to me. And what he said made me believe that maybe I could overcome my learning problems and someday become intelligent. Never thought I was going to be intelligent. I thought I was going to be a surfer and make surfboards. I had long hair and a beard and stuff. And I thought I was going to make surfboards until that night. And that night I had a dream. I had a dream to be able to read, to be able to write, to be able to speak, and to become a teacher. That was right before my 18th birthday, a week before my 18th birthday. And I left that little class and studied with that gentleman. he offered to, he gave classes every morning on the other side of the island. So I hitchhiked to the other side of the island just to be with him. And I learned what I could from him. And I decided I was going to go back and see my parents. And they encouraged me to take a GED, which is a high school equivalency test. And I guessed and I passed. It was a miracle. And I tried, they taught me into trying to go to school, to college, a junior college. Couldn't go to university with the high school degree, that I mean, a high school equivalency. So I took a junior college test and I got a 27. I needed a 72 to pass and I failed. And I was really distraught because I thought that my new trajectory about becoming intelligent and a teacher was real. And when I got that test score of 27 and everybody else was above 72, I cried on my way home, driving back to my parents' house. And I just lost my vision. I just couldn't see that I was going to be able to pull it off. All I could hear is my first grade teacher talking in my head. I came home and I curled up in a fetal position under this little Bible stand. And my mom came home and from shopping and saw me there. And she said, "What happened, son? What's wrong?" I said, I blew the test. I guess I don't have what it takes. And I repeated what the first grade teacher said. And she paused for a second. I guess I told her, I said, I guess I don't have what it takes. I guess I'll never read, write, or communicate, never amount to thing, never go very far in life. And she said, she put her hand on my shoulder and she said something that really, really I needed to hear. She said, "Whether you become a great teacher and philosopher and travel the world like you dream, or you go back to Hawaii and ride giant waves, which you've done, or return to the streets and panhandle as a bum, I just want to let you know that your father and I are going to love you no matter what." When she said that, my hand went into a fist. And I said to myself, "I'm going to master this thing called reading and studying and learning. I'm going to master this thing called teaching and philosophy. And I'm going to do whatever it takes, travel whatever distance, pay whatever price to get my service of love across this planet. I'm not going to let any human being on the face of the earth stop me, not even myself." I hugged my mom. I went back to my room and I got a Funkin' Wagnalls dictionary out. And I made a commitment to memorize 30 words a day. I would spell them, use them in a sentence, write the sentence 20 times, spell it 20 times, say it 20 times. Extract a meaning, and my mom would test me on 30 words a day until I had 20,000 words in the next 2 years in my head. And I went from the bottom of the class to the top of the class, and I lived reading pretty well 20 hours a day, or I was in class. And I started reading dictionaries and I started reading encyclopedias. When I turned 19, my mom asked me, "What do you want for your birthday and for Christmas?" Because I was born on Thanksgiving Day. I said, "Mom, I want the greatest teachings on the face of the earth, the greatest writings, humanities created by the greatest minds who ever lived." And she said, "You sure you don't want a t-shirt, son?" I said, "No. I want to learn, Mom." So she contacted her brother, who was a professor at MIT, physicist and chemist, really bright guy. And as a gift, he sent two giant 6x6x6 foot wooden crates on a flatbed truck to our home. When they came and put them on the ground, I went out with a crowbar and opened up those crates and carried thousands of books into my room. And I just wanted to read. I wanted to catch up. And so I've done that. I've now devoured 31,000 books and try my best to read every single day, write every single day, speak every single day. I'll do 5 podcasts today and travel. I'm not very useful anywhere else. That's about all I'm good at.
These are your values. I think It's the first time I've been crying on our podcast, Aletta.
I know. This is such a gripping life story.
Yes.
Vad är egentligen kollagen? Jo, det är ett protein vi har mycket av i kroppen och det hjälper oss med att hålla oss starka och smidiga och det är en av de viktigaste byggeklossarna i allt bindeväv hos människa, dyr, fisk och fugl.
I huden finner vi kollagenet i det mittersta laget dermis, där kollagenfibrerna gör huden fast och glatt. Vi tar tillskudd för att kroppens produktion av kollagen den går nedover när vi blir äldre.
Vi tar egentligen mindre och mindre kosttillskudd, särskilt om sommaren när man får mycket näring av att vara utendörs.
Men kollagenpulveret, The Solution, det har varit med oss i hela sommer, ja, helt sedan vi startade att ta det tidigt i vår.
Ja, för vi söker naturligt tilltag till god hälsa och detta pulver stöttar hudhälsan vår och man har sett resultat på fina linjer, elasticitet och celluliter.
Kollagen är i vinden som aldrig förr. På hälsokongresser över hela världen snackas det nå mycket om det nyaste inom forskning på kollagen.
Det känns som mat och pulver är 100% naturligt. Det är bara att blanda i favoritdrycken din och låta det virka från insidan och ut.
Drömmer du om strålande hud med ungdomlig glöd kan du gå in på osloskinlab.no och beställa. Biohacking 60 ger dig 60% på första köp och 30% på din nästa. We have to go back to your first grade teacher because this is so common that grown-ups, teachers, whoever, put beliefs in our heads that are not our values. And what do we do? How did you get out of this and how can we help ourselves?
Well, I thank her because she gave me the void. The very thing she said I would never do, I've excelled at. So everything's on the way. It's not in the way. I just didn't see it yet. She was doing exactly what was needed on my journey. We go through and we want to be victims of history instead of masters of destiny. And everything is on the way. Anything you can't say thank you for is baggage. Time to look at it again. Anything you need to change in others relative to you or you relative to others is an incomplete awareness of what is. Once we see it for what it is, we're grateful. And we feel the love that the universe is providing us. I mean, that was an accurate assessment, what she gave me. But I had to work at it. You know, people say, oh, you're so gifted. Really? That said that to Michelangelo too. But then when his comment was, if you knew how much work it took to do this, you wouldn't call it gifted. You know, you see greatness in people who put the effort in. That's my experience. I don't know of anybody that's done something extraordinary with ordinary actions.
We lately have been reading a little bit about the philosophy of the natives, American natives. And you mentioned in one of the podcasts that we heard about Romans 2:1, judge as something you judge in yourself. So how can we move from the aggressiveness or the fear or the anxiety or sadness that we carry for some people, like you said, role models or parents or friends, and move over to actually take steps towards love and saying thank you. It's kind of difficult to understand.
I don't want to misrepresent or mislead or misinform that you're going to be there and stay there. Your journey is going to be an ongoing journey. Whatever you know is finite, and whatever you don't know is potentially infinite. And so as what you know grows, you have the next mystery to confront. And in each mystery, you tend to judge because of the unknowns, the missing information. And so I don't want to give people the impression that you're going to get there and stay there. You're finally there. There's no arrival. There's just the journey. Because I certainly have my buttons that I get my buttons pushed. I was in London recently and I was flying to Vietnam. And they said, the visa you have is not going to let you in. We can't let you on the plane. So I didn't sit there and chant Om.
No.
So I had to come up with a strategy to convince them that I could be, my visa was adequate because I just left Vietnam 5 days earlier with that visa and that visa was perfectly fine. But somebody at the front desk just was afraid of giving me a flight there and they fly me back. I mean, it was just one of those glitchy things. So I bought another ticket to Hong Kong passing through Vietnam and just happened to get off, and then contacted the company and demanded them pay for that extra ticket because I was fine when I got there, and they were just frightened that I wouldn't get through. So, you know, we have to plan, come up with contingency plans sometimes, and we react. And I'm no different. I'm nice as a pussycat if you support my vibes. I can be mean as a tiger if you challenge them. So I don't want to give people the impression that you do this and you'll never have this reaction again. If you have a reaction, which your amygdala is called systems one thinking, and it tends to make you react fast for emergencies. Then comes your executive function, systems two thinking, where you then are more reasonable and you think before you react. I do both. I have times when I'm intelligent and other times when I'm ignorant and I react. So I don't want to, and I've been doing it 52 years, so I don't want to give the impression that, well, no, he's just a Zen guy. I'm not. I have moments where I'm Zen and moments when I'm an idiot. So I just want to put that on the table so I don't give people the impression then, because what they'll do is they'll compare it to this ideal and then beat themselves up. And then what am my objective is undermined. So when I find myself in my emotional reactions and I'm judging somebody, I may not do it a moment on the spot, but within seconds or minutes or possibly hours, I will usually pull out my method that I've developed. And I will stop and ask, okay, what individual am I reacting to? And I'll define the individual. Then I'll ask, what specific trait, action or inaction, do I perceive this individual displaying or demonstrating that I admire most or despise most? Because I might be infatuated or resentful. Both are judgments. And then I define that. I get really concise on what that is. And I make sure it's really not vague and general. It's very specific. And then I ask myself through reflection, all right, John, because we know that what we judge in others is nothing but a reflection of what we're judging in ourselves. I've proven that for 40 years now. I said, now go to a moment, John, where and when you perceive yourself displaying or demonstrating this same specific trait, action, and action that you admire or despise most. And identify where it was and when it was and who I demonstrated to and who perceived me that way. And I keep doing that until the quantity and quality of my behavior is matching what I perceive in them. And the moment I do, I'm no longer too proud or too humble to admit what I see in them inside me. I'm now having reflective awareness, and it starts to level out the judgment and make me realize I'm pointing my finger at myself, and they're brought into my life to help me see what I haven't loved in myself. And now giving me a chance to love that part. Then I'll go into another question. All right, John, go to a moment where and when you actually perceive them doing this behavior that you're judging. And in that exact moment, how is it a benefit to me if I'm resenting it? Or how is it a drawback to me if I'm infatuated with it? Because when I'm infatuated, I'm blind to the downsides, and I'm resenting, I'm blind to the upsides. And I hold myself accountable to a balance sheet, to bring those into a balance sheet and find out what are the benefits to their behavior. Because every behavior has advantages and disadvantages, or it would have gone extinct. It serves in some way. So how? When I find the benefits of that, I find that I level the playing field, and it's neither positive nor negative, neither good or evil, neither attractive or repulsive. It's just present. I'm back in my Zen. Anything I infatuate or resent occupies space and time in my mind, and intrusive thoughts dominate my mind, and I'm not present. The world around me is running me. My misperception of the world around me is running me. But the second I bring it into balance, the noise is gone. The Zen is back. My presence is there. My authenticity is there because I'm not exaggerating or minimizing me relative to them. And I have an opportunity to realize that they came into my life to teach me how to love another part of myself that I had been denying.
Can we all learn this with your method?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect.
That's just two questions out of 80 questions inside the method. There's a whole bunch of distinctions that we make, but those are two simple questions that we can ask. 40 years ago, I was noticing that what I was saying to other people, you know, my judgments of other people and reacting to them, many times what I was saying to them was for me. I think language is not only for others, it's also for self to listen to. And I decided instead of waiting for people to push my buttons, I thought I'd do a preemptive strike by looking in the Oxford English Dictionary for every possible human behavioral trait that might ever push my button. I went through the dictionary. I found 4,628 individual traits, behaviors. And Gordon Allport found 4,000 35 years earlier, and he was as neurotic as I was. So this is what I found. And I underlined each one of the traits as I went through there. Kind, cruel, nice, mean, positive, negative, wrathful, peaceful, inconsiderate, considerate, honest, dishonest, all the traits. And then I went out to the far left or right of the page, and I thought, who do I know that displays or demonstrates that trait to the fullest degree of anybody I know? That's real, not somebody that's hearsay on television, but somebody I actually know. Who is it that's the most extreme example of that behavior? And I put their name out on the thing, write it really small. And then I did that exercise. All right, John, go to a moment where and when you perceive yourself displaying or demonstrating the specific trait, action, and action that you are admiring or despising in this individual. And where you do it, when do you do it, who do you do it to, and who perceives it? And I just kept doing that and doing that and doing that until I perceived myself on the same exact level playing field as what I judge them. And then I realized that if I own those traits, people can't push my buttons. They can only push my buttons and hook me with an infatuation or resentment when I've got a disowned part, a disowned trait. So when I owned it, I noticed that now my judgments of others were more balanced, more neutral, and I was not reactive as much. I was more in my executive function instead of my amygdala. And so that's a very powerful exercise to honor the wholeness of yourself instead of denying parts of ourselves. Our fulfillment in life is how much of those parts we can own and embrace. And our unfulfillment is how many can we dodge and deflect.
Vi opptatt av å yte, prestere optimalt og samtidig støtte opp om god helse. Dette biohacking.
Ja, og vi vil fremheve et supplement vi veldig glad i og som vi bruker hver eneste dag. Det salte elektrolyttene fra Superstate. Disse egenproduserte med gode ingredienser, og her det ikke tatt noen shortcuts.
Men hvorfor tar vi egentlig elektrolytter? Jo, hvis du spiser et råvarebasert kosthold, da trenger du mer salt enn hvis du spiser veldig mye ferdigprodusert mat, for den inneholder mye salt.
Og drikker du mye vann, så skiller du ut elektrolyttene og blir faktisk dehydrert i stedet for hydrert.
Og følger du et lavkarbo eller et keto-kosthold, skiller nyrene ut mer natrium, og det gjerne grunnen til at vi får ketoflu. Da hjelper det å fylle på med saltet.
Saltelektrolytter fyller på med de viktige mineralene natrium, kalium og magnesium. De sørger for riktig væskebalanse og raskere restitusjon. Selvsagt disse uten sukker og andre lumske ingredienser, og de kan også brukes ved faste.
Og vi har våre favoritter. Jeg veldig glad i sitronsmaken. Da blander jeg den i vann med isbiter. Da føler jeg at jeg har en skikkelig treat foran meg.
Og jeg digger den med appelsinsmak og lager gjerne ispinner i fryseren. Det kjempegodt, og de enkle å ta med seg i væsken, for det porsjonsstørrelse som nok til en halv liter.
Vil du teste, har vi et tilbud til deg. Gå inn på stupestate.no, finn din favorittsmak og bruk rabattkoden BG20 til 8. november.
But we think about like the human being, biohackers, we always, the organs would like homeostasis, like the gut, the heart, the brain. So in order to feel these changes that you're talking about, what is the time frame here? Is it happening like overnight or will it take years? When can we start feeling the change?
Well, I hope I don't get too technical here, but whenever we have a perception of infatuation, we activate the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest one. That's why we want to take people out to dinner and then sleep with them.
That's the parasympathetic.
But it's not rest and digest. It's digest and then rest. Yeah. And hopefully it's not. It's hope there's no rest for the night. You're up all night. But so that's a parasympathetic response, which is rest and digest, anabolic, alkalinizing, reducing chemistry, increasing mitosis, lowering heart rate, lowering blood sugar, because it's bringing insulin up, glucagon down, and blood pressure is going down, blood lipids are going down. I mean, white blood cells are being stimulated, immune system is relaxing and going up. There's certain physiological responses that occur, and acetylation in epigenetics is going on inside the histones and DNA and relaxing the DNA for mitotic expression and protein transcription. And dynein, which is a transport molecule, protein, transports information from the peripheral of the cell back into the nucleus so it can divide and undergo the spindle fiber formation, etc. So the cell undergoes a mitotic expression, a growth, an anabolic. And this is because we are perceiving support more than challenge and activating parasympathetic. On the other side of the coin, and every cell has an autonomic receptors, just about. Some cells have one more than another, but their autonomic system runs the show on cell physiology. When we see something that we resent and despise and deny in ourselves and too proud to admit I have that, the sympathetic is activated, the fight or flight response. And now we've got catabolism, not anabolism, and we get defense, and our amygdala, you know, creates predator response instead of prey response onto the parasympathetic. And now we're all automatically going in and oxidizing, acidifying, breaking things down, osteoclastic behavior. We start creating, you know, fibrosis in the physiology, fibrous tissues, platelet development, blood pressure goes up, blood sugar goes up to fight or flight, lipids go up. We have certain responses that are predictable. And if those are chronic and we store those subconsciously stored emotions long enough, we can create autonomic dysregulations and we create symptomatology. And we get now methylation instead of acetylation from epigenetics, which tightens up the histones and DNA, stops the transcription process. We go out for defense. Kinesin molecules take the materials from the center of the cell and put it out in the periphery for defense. And we protect ourselves inside the cell, just like we do our body, just like we do in a society when we're under defense. And the symptoms, if you understand applied physiology and you take each individual cell and look at how the autonomics respond to it, and look at the symptomatology of a person that's presenting clinically, you can decipher the potential psychology that's underlying these conditions. I've been doing it 46 years, and I wrote a big textbook on it. And what's interesting is the body doesn't lie. Our words lie, but not the body. Our words are influenced by moral hypocrisies in society about how we should be. But our body doesn't pay attention to that. Our body is revealing what's going on in our psyche. And it's revealing whether we feel supported or challenged in our values and whether we're, you know, parasympathetic or sympathetic dominant. Now, when these come into balance and we ask the right questions, which I developed in my method, to balance that out, the delta waves of the parasympathetic and the beta waves of the sympathetic come back towards an alpha-theta junction, and you get a gamma synchronicity as a moment of authenticity because you're now not putting people on pedestals or pits, you're putting them in your heart. And then your body gives you confirmation of authenticity by normalizing physiology and healing. That's why love is still the greatest healer. And gratitude is a confirmation that you feel loved. So gratitude and love are still, I believe, two of the greatest confirmation of healing. And I've seen people with, I had a lady in Calgary, Canada that had 11 years with irritable bowel syndrome. And a doctor, a medical doctor named Bruce Hoffman, referred 400 patients to the breakthrough experience that I've been teaching. And he had been trying to treat her with medical integrative approaches. But he sent him to the breakthrough experience to do the method on an issue dealing with her father. And she had not wanted to talk to her father for 11 years. She'd had this condition. We dissolved the resentment to the father and found out where she's done everything he's done and the benefits of it and neutralized it. So she was just in tears. And the following day, she woke up, the cramps, the bloat disappeared. And for 3 years, I repeated going back to her until COVID. Never had another symptom. So I am certain that there's more that we have access to doing psychophysiologically than we have been influenced to believe. We got to realize that there's palliative care and curative care. And most orthodox approaches are palliative and they're pharmaceutical and they're not necessarily psychological. And yet we know that stress and epigenetics and autoimmune responses are skyrocketing in our understanding of conditions of illness. So I've been involved in epigenetics a long time, 40-something years. And it wasn't popular back then. It was just an odd thing. But there's no doubt in my mind that our psychology is affecting physiology. And it's being more mainstream now than ever. So I've had to be patient watching this and accumulating information on this. And if you take any cell in the body and you study applied physiology, and you can see why it does what it does. I mean, the sympathetic nervous system is hemopoietic and induces red blood cells. During the day, we fight or flight. During the night, we rest and digest, right? So during the day, we have red blood cells that are activated, and they are correlated with testosterone and leptin. And leptin, you know, when you have an eating disorder, if you ask people when you have an eating disorder, how many of you overeat when you're stressed? Half the room will put their hands up. How many of you undereat? If you trace it, you'll find out when they're overeating, they're perceiving a stress of the perception of loss of something they're seeking. Because they're seeking it, they want to eat it, and they create ghrelin. If all of a sudden they have a perception of a gain of something they don't want as a stress, they get leptin. One shuts down the eating, one turns on the eating. It's a psychology behind it. So I can go in and identify what the psychology in it and all of a sudden address their eating responses. And it's really quite interesting to watch. And this has been over and over repeated. A lady in Ashy Bynes in Australia who deals with thousands of women that are trying to keep fit and lose weight. We did a beautiful pilot study on some of her cases and these difficult cases. And we traced what was going on in the psychology. We found a woman, for instance, that she was not feeling appreciated by her husband. When she wasn't, she was withdrawing from her. Another man came into her life and showed affection. She started to almost have a fling, but she had children and she had a value on keeping the marriage, but she couldn't seem to know how to communicate to get the husband's attention, because now she's got extra kids. They need a bigger house. He's having to work more and they're separated a little bit and they're more distant. This guy comes on to her. She shows affection to him. And then right before she almost had the affair sexually, she said, I can't do it. She just stopped. And in the process of doing it, she gained weight. She cut her hair. She put on glasses. She made herself look frumpy to prevent her from undermining her marriage. So she created as a response for the fear of loss of that which she wanted to keep and the fear of gain of something that would cause challenge, affair, she did an autonomic response to put on weight. And she didn't speak up. The thyroid gland is an expression of the tongue originally. The thyroglossal duct comes out of the tongue. And so when people have low thyroid, they have slurred speech, slow speech, and they gain weight, metabolism dries, they get dry skin, dry hair, et cetera. And people that are repressing what they want to say lower the thyroid. And people that are expressing tactlessly whatever they say, don't care, their thyroid goes up. So this person, because they were repressing what they wanted to say, they wanted to tell the truth, but they couldn't for fear of loss. The thyroid starts to slow down. They get a bowling pin look. Their physiology and physiognomy is telling them everything about what's going on in their psyche. And I see this over and over again in various conditions. And I love helping people navigate through and figure out what that all is about. And then they do the method on clearing whatever it is that we find. And then their physiology starts normalizing again. And it's really quite inspiring. And without the drugs sometimes, you know, some people jump to a drug to alter the transmitters. But one thing I'm certain about is the transmitters are the biochemical imbalance model that they used on depression was a 1991 false document. And they've now exposed that. So we go around and we think, well, it's caused by this imbalance. But the question is what's causing the imbalance? I assure you it's subconsciously stored perceptions that are impacting it. Because if a tiger comes into a room and starts to leap toward you, and I get a pen out and I go freeze frame, Men in Black, and stop it as it's about to eat your head. Arr. If I quickly do your blood chemistries and brain chemistries, I guarantee I'm going to see osteocalcin, cortisol, norepinephrine, epinephrine, testosterone. I'm going to see, you know, substance P. I'm going to see chemistry and a low serotonin, low enkephalons, low dopamine response. Now, if all of a sudden I did the Men in Black pen again and the tiger stops, puts his arms around you and says, "You're great. I'm Tony Tiger." And all of a sudden you've always since childhood wanted to meet Tony Tiger. And now the chemistry flips in 200 milliseconds. So if you have stored subconsciously baggage that you haven't neutralized, you're going to throw your chemistries off. And even though there's thousands of micro homeostatic feedback systems trying to stabilize it with a homeostasis or allostasis, you're constantly perturbing it by running the story and being stimulated by things that remind you of what you're judging. So going in there and neutralizing those judgments, those primary ones, the secondary ones, and tertiary associations you make around them, you can change your physiology. And I watched this over and over again. And it's so inspiring to give people their power back and let them be masters of their destiny, not victims of their history, and depend on things.
Biohacking handler om å optimalisere helsen, og dette gjelder I aller høyeste grad hudhelsen.
Nå på høsten trenger huden litt ekstra. Jeg som fortsatt bor I Norge kjenner at huden min blir tørrere, lettere rød og har fått seg noen pigmentflekker I løpet av sommeren.
Ja, jeg kjenner selv I Spania at huden I endring på høsten, og huden har sin helt egen cirkadianske rytme som følger årstidene.
Vi så glade for å ha det svenske, naturlige hudpleieserien Skinome med som samarbeidspartnere på podden igjen. De produserer fersk og forskningsbasert hudpleie, akkurat som en biohacker digger.
Og nå har de kommet med to nye spennende produkter som glimrende for denne årstiden. Fuktkremen Derma Illusion, den roer ned rød, irritert og sensitiv hud, og passer perfekt med det nye serumet Acelic Concentrate, som inneholder 10% acelainsyre, som hjelper med å balansere bakteriene I huden, som kan være årsak til rosacea og hyperpigmentering.
Vi må også fremheve Probiotic Concentrate som vi har brukt en stund nå. Med sine over 100 millioner levende lactic acid bakterier gir den huden en deilig og myk overflate og styrker alle de gode hudbakteriene vi har. Dette grunnen til vår gode hudhelse. Denne vi blitt avhengig av.
Ja, og det så herlig at det føles som mat for huden. Gå inn på skinome.com og bruk rabattkoden BIOHACKINGGIRLS20 om du keen på å teste.
Beautiful. And we, of course, know that you have helped millions of people. But how would this look like for a practical reason, to learn more about the Demartini method, the breakthrough experience? Where would be a good starting point for people to expand and get this homeostasis? It sounds wonderful.
Well, most likely, most people may find me on social media, or they or somebody's referred them or something, but they may go to the website and they may look at some videos or something. But the Breakthrough Experience, which is my signature program that I've been doing for 35 years almost, I've done it 1,218 times, about to do one here in a couple of days, 19 times. That is where most people get introduced to the work. I mean, I've got 80 courses I teach. That's the first one. And that's if they're remotely interested in going down the rabbit hole, I got plenty of stuff for people. But that's where most people start. Or they read a book, or they, you know, they do the books and the videos and the YouTube videos and stuff. That's a lot of, that's a filtering process, you might say. But the breakthrough is where I actually hold you accountable to identify something you're judging and actually show you how to dissolve it and let you experience the physiological change. That's where I begin.
But even if there's hundreds of people there, they would still, everybody would still feel connected.
I don't let them get away until they do.
Good.
No, I have facilitators assisting me on a, usually a 1-7 level. So we have one facilitator for 7 people assisting when I do them. I had one in Japan recently, and sometimes they're small groups. I do the breakthrough. I've done them down to small groups to 750 people at a time. I mean, I just do them. But I do my best to try to make sure that they get the experience. The only way they won't get the experience in the breakthrough experience is if they choose not to face the truth about their nature and run. And that happens about 1 out of 500 people. I mean, sometimes people don't want to face the truth of their nature. They want to pretend that you're a victim of history instead of being a master of destiny. My work is not for the people that want to spectate and want to go rah-rah. My work is about, are you interested in mastering your life and finding out what you're capable of actually fulfilling in your life? If you are, then I'm the guy for that.
When will you come to Norway?
When are you going to bring me?
Okay, good. Okay. Now we got it. We're going to talk with Justine.
Yeah. When are you going to bring me? I came there on a number of occasions. You know, I live on a ship, and the ship was built in Trondheim. And Durango area. And so I've been to Norway, and I've been to a number of places in Norway. I've been all along the fjords and sailed in there. And it's one of the most beautiful places, particularly in the summer. In the winter, it's a bit cold. But summertime, it's extraordinary. And I was there a year and a half ago, I think, right in Oslo. We sailed in right into Oslo because they've got a beautiful port there, and they've really developed that. And it's amazing what they've done there. But I will come there anytime people will come and listen to me, and it can be organized. I love sharing these ideas with people.
How wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great, actually, to have you visit again then. But how to do more things of what you want to do? I've heard you talk about this. And move your life towards what you like.
46 years ago, I asked myself a question. Why do some people walk their talk and some people limp their life? Why do some people do what they say and others don't? And I found, first, what is it that drives human beings? And I realized it was human values. That's why every talk you hear me, I'll mention values. Because everybody has a hierarchy of values, a set of priorities that they live their life by. And that hierarchy of values dictates how they perceive, decide, and act. It decides how you filter reality, make decisions, and your priorities in life. If you set goals that are congruent and aligned with your highest value, you will spontaneously act. You don't need external motivation, incentives, or reminders to do it. You just do it. Just like a young boy doing video games, his mom doesn't say, now stop doing those the video game. She says, stop doing the video games and do your homework. But she never has to say, stop doing the homework and do those video games. So he spontaneously does what's highest on his value, and he needs motivation to do what's lowest. So anytime you are attempting to do something lower on your values because you don't know what your values are, and I would have to say most don't, you will create friction instead of acceleration. And that's why if you're not prioritizing your life and filling your day with the highest priority actions and delegating lower priority actions, don't expect a self-actualized, inspired life. Not going to happen. So I teach, research, and write, and travel. Everything else is delegated. So I have captain for my ship. I've got concierge for my travels. I've got people that cook. I got people that drive. I even tell my girlfriend, if I have George Clooney taking care of lovemaking on my behalf, would you still love me? She said, I'd love you even more. So I try to delegate. That was a joke. But I try to delegate everything because that gives me freedom to do what I'm inspired to do that I love doing, my core competence, that one thing that gives me my competitive advantage. And so I don't do the other things. I just don't do them. I say no to anything that requires external motivation. And I say yes to anything that inspires me. And some people say, well, that's great because you're independently wealthy. You can do that. I became independently wealthy because I did that.
But where is the limit between doing, living your values 100% and becoming egocentrical, too self-conscious?
The thing is that whenever you're living by your highest value, you wake up blood, glucose, and oxygen into the executive center, the medial prefrontal cortex. And this is where you're most objective, most reasonable, most strategically planning, most inspired with vision, most spontaneously executing actions that are strategic, and most philanthropic, because you love solving problems that inspire you to solve. And you don't think of yourself. You think of what is the biggest problems that I can contribute on the planet. So it's not egocentric. It's global-centric in that respect, because you expand your space and time horizons and realize that everyone out there is a reflection of you, and your love for you is based on the love for fulfilling with sustainable fair exchange other people's dreams too. I love teaching. I'm inspired by it, but I also love making some sort of contribution as I share. If we stop and ask ourselves the most inspiring, fulfilling moment we've ever had in our life, and I've asked a lot of people that, they will say, when I'm making a contribution to other people's lives, and they're saying thank you, and I'm using my skill to the fullest. So that's what happens when you actually live by the highest priorities. I'm very busy. I don't just sit and, you know, self-center. I'm constantly doing what I can to contribute. And I think that's what I find when people live by their authentic self. The people I know who are living congruently with their highest values are the biggest contributors on the planet that I've seen.
So how could we convert this? Let's pick up your brain about raising kids, going to school, having homework, duties, whatever, and also passion about gaming or sports or whatever. Where could we as parents guide them in a better way?
Well, the first thing we want to be careful about is projecting our wounds onto them. Sometimes what we think we're doing for them is just trying to prevent them from inevitably expressing our repressions to teach us how to love the parts we haven't loved. So that you want to be honest with yourself about why it's so important, because sometimes it's just you avoiding a pain in your life that you haven't actually resolved. And you don't want them to go through your pain, because if you clear your pain, you leave them alone. Another thing is to know that they are individual human beings with a set of values, and their values aren't wrong or right. They're just their set of values at this stage of their life. And if you try to project your values onto them arrogantly, they're going to retaliate and let you know it. But if you care enough to communicate what you value in terms of what they value, they're receptive because they're getting what they want and you're getting what you want. So teachers, I'll give you an example. I was in South Africa and I went to a township where they had a 27% pass rate in matric. This is a low socioeconomic township. They live in shacks. 27 out of 100 people finished high school. The test passed. So I went to the school and the school board asked me to do presentations and some education. And I sat with the teachers before the school began, the week before school classes started. And I helped them determine their values one by one. I found out the curriculum they were responsible for teaching and the job description that they were doing. And we linked all the topics they were teaching to their highest values so they were inspired and engaged to do it. Because if they can't see how teaching what they're teaching inspires them, they're disengaged and they're unenthused and they're not present and kids don't want to be in the class. And then I took all the job responsibilities that they did, that they were responsible for, and linked them to their highest values. So they saw those job duties on the way, not in the way. So their level of gratitude, love, inspiration, enthusiasm, certainty, and presence went up. Because when people are grateful for their job, loving what they're doing, inspired by the vision, enthusiastically working, certain about their skill, and present when they do it, they are magnets to kids. Then we took the kids and we did the same for the kids. We identified, this is the first day in class I was there. They don't really do a lot that day. So we just used this time and we found out what their values were with a value determination process, which is on my website, free on my website. And we went and did that. They all identified their values. And then we linked each of the classes that they're going to be taking for the term to their highest values so they could see how it was going to help them get what they want in life. Because otherwise it's being shoved down their throat and they don't see how it's going to serve them and they just do the bare minimum and they're disengaged and they want to distract with their amygdala and go do drugs or alcohol or whatever. So we got them engaged. Then we came back on another one. Weeks later, we came back and we did a linking of the teacher's values to the student's values so there was respect between them. So the teacher could see how each of their values was not wrong, but each of their values were fulfilling the teacher's values and the teacher's values fulfilling the student's values. And that was each of these were 4-hour sessions, total of 12 hours. At the end of the year, 97% of the kids passed matric. Now, why? Because every child wants to learn. They just want to learn what they feel will fulfill what's important to them. And if we don't respect what's important to them and we tell them, well, that you'll grow out of that. You need to be doing this. That's like somebody coming up to you and saying, you need to change and you resist it and you shut down. So kids are adults and little bodies, but we treat them sometimes as kids. And if we basically communicate what we value respectfully in terms of their values, you'd be surprised how they respond. It's amazing. And if you do, they're more self-governed because whenever they're living in their highest values, they're more self-governed. They govern themselves and you don't need to micromanage them and put all the punishment rewards and all the rules on them. But when you try to force them autocratically to do things, they retaliate to give you symptoms to let you know you're not authentic because you're being superior and they're not allowed to be authentic. They're being inferior. And that will give you feedback to let you know that doesn't work.
Hei, det Jenny Skavlan her.
Og Mari Nordén her.
6. og 7. september neste år arrangerer vi Fabrikstad-festivalen. Nordens gøyeste og grønneste klesfestival. Og da fyller vi vikingskipet på Hamar med verdens største sykurs, et gigantisk vintage-marked, strikkelandsby, foredrag, podcaster, politiske debatter og mye, mye mer.
Nå billetten ute. Du får helgepass til early bird-pris, altså 395 kroner. For fullpris, det 600 spenn. Les mer og kjøp billetter på fabrik.no.
Julas tilbud hos Spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe.
I tillegg får du også fersk krydret tynnribbe fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Altid tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss I Spar.
Thank you for sharing this. How big percentage do you think is about the brain and the attraction, the power of the attraction and the values, and how big percentage might be the culture we are living in, ultra-processed, toxic world, wars? Yeah. Where do you see this?
There's two theories in psychology and sociology. One is you're a product of your environment, and the other is you're a product of your perception of the environment. And I have people every week in the Breakthrough Experience or consulting that tell me a story about how this happened to them and that's why they're the way they are. And they're victims of history. Then they run their story. And I don't find that to be true. I don't know of any human being that can't have a change in perception about whatever's happened in their life and turn it in on the way instead of in the way. I'd like to give a story on that. So I'm in Florida doing the Breakthrough Experience. And there's a lady there who has ratty hair, kind of a bit overweight, kind of a girl that you would imagine trying to protect herself from men, you know, trying to make herself look unappealing. And she claimed and ran her story and loved her story. I think she'd been to some therapist for 35 years about this story and said, my mother abandoned me, rejected me. And I said, okay. And then she said, and my life has been just terrible. I've done this and I've been raped and I've been this and degraded and da, da, da. And I said, let's go back to this first thing we started with, your idea that your mother abandoned you. What specific aspect of your mom did you think you missed out on? And we listed them. And I said, who provided it? Nothing's missing. Who provided it? And she hemmed and hawed, and then finally she started opening up and saying, my aunt, well, my mom's sister, my aunt. I said, so you were partly raised by your aunt? Yes. When my mom abandoned me, my aunt took me over, and my grandmother, and one of my best friend's mothers, and a teacher. I said, so the behavior that you wished you had gotten from your mother, because anytime you compare your current reality to a fantasy about how it could have been, should have been, would have been, you won't appreciate your life. So I said, in that moment when your mom left, who took on those traits? And she said, my aunt, my grandmother, my best friend's mother, and my teacher. I said, so can you see that the quantity of what you expected your mom to deliver was delivered by these people? Yes. She said, quantitatively, yes. I said, what was the benefit of them doing it? Well, I got to learn a different language. I got to find out what it's like to be in another home. And I stayed at this other person's home a lot because my aunt needed a break sometimes. And my aunt gave me information that I probably wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. I stacked up the benefits of what happened until she was grateful and got a tear. I said, now, if your mom had not left and she would have delivered that behavior, what would have been the drawback? And at first she said, there wouldn't be a drawback. I said, yeah. That's the fantasy. Every behavior has two sides. What would be the drawback to her delivering it? And then she just paused and stared and got tears in her eyes. I said, what is it? She said something my aunt said that when I was very young, that all of a sudden came into my mind right now that I couldn't hear, but I just got. I said, what is it? My mother was bipolar, and my aunt told me, and she started crying on the spot. And she said, my aunt told me that your mother was bathing you in a bath and had the hot water on too hot, and forgot you were there, and you nearly drowned, and you got burned. And your mother came to me and said that my daughter deserves better than what I can provide. Please help me. And I don't want her to ever see me like this. So what she thought was abandonment and rejection was a deep love enough, because a mother doesn't give up their child unless they think there's a better package. And then it takes a lot of courage for a mother to say, you can do a better job. Please take care of this. When she got that, her perception and 35-year story popped. And then she realized that she was special. And she wanted to honor her mom's dedication to give her that opportunity to a better life than what she could offer. Now, when she got through with that, her perception, her facial expressions, her mannerisms, the drama, the victim story, just all went down and disappeared. As she started doing the method on all the traits that she thought her mother didn't deliver and found out who did, because nothing's ever missing. It's just in a form we don't honor because we have a fantasy about how it's supposed to be. And the moment she honored what it was, when you honor life as it is, it turns into what you love. But when you compare it to what you think it should be, which is a fantasy, you'll never appreciate your life. And so she actually got to appreciate her mom and find her mom and hug her mom and thank her mom and transform the 35-year delusionary story into something that was profound. She went on to write a book, lose weight, redo her hair, make herself not frightened of men, because she did not feel worthy of a decent man, and she was hanging out with people that treated her like she was treating herself, and she was treating her mom. And when she changed her perceptions of herself, she changed the world around her. So I'm not a big believer in it's the world out there all the time. I'm not saying that there aren't challenges out there. I've seen people in very tough, you know, situations, unbelievable situations. But it's not what happens to you. It's what you decide to perceive, decide, and act from it. And I can take it. There's nothing your mortal body can experience that your mortal soul can't love. And I've proven that on God knows how many cases. And people say, well, how do we turn this into something? If we stay with it, we ask the right questions. A quarter of our life is basically acquire the questions we ask. If we ask questions that liberate us from the elusive perceptions that we've been addicted to, and give ourselves permission to see the whole and liberate us from the intrusive thoughts, from the judgments, we can turn whatever's happened to us into amazing opportunities. That's why I'm grateful for my teacher. I could have used that as my victimhood for the rest of my life, but I'm grateful for my teacher because the teacher said exactly what it was necessary for me to have the drive to be who I am today. Thank you.
What a beautiful story. Wow.
Really, really. And you ended with saying thank you. And we started actually talking about thank you, thanks too. So this is probably where we should move to the end and be more grateful for whatever life provides us, yeah, for good and bad.
Well, if we choose to see through our authentic eyes, we will see nothing but love. All else was illusion. And we'll have plenty to be grateful for. I can't say that I live 100% through my authentic eyes. I sometimes have delusions, but I know I can come back to it and I know the questions to lead me back to it. And it's my responsibility to do so.
That's actually a biohacker's lifestyle. That's like 80% is biohacking and 20% is slacking. So we always have to tune in again.
Always. We always get another chance to tune in and move forward. So it's great.
Well,
yeah.
The number of mysteries, as Socrates said, I know nothing. And they considered him the wisest of his times because he realized that what he knows. See, if you infatuate with something, you don't know them. You're ignorant of the downsides. If you're resentful to somebody, you don't know them. You're ignorant of the upside. When you come to know them, you're aware of both sides simultaneously, and neither one of them intrude your thoughts. You're present with love. And Socrates was knowledgeable. That's what true gnosis or knowledge is. And he was knowledgeable enough to see that. And he also realized that whatever he knew is an insignificant infinitesimal before the infinitude of the majestic world and universe beyond.
Dr. John DeMartini, it was really nice to talk to you today. And we truly hope we can see you in Norway so we can be inspired and do the breakthrough experience together with you.
Yeah, it's an experience.
Yeah, sounds like
it. I hold people accountable. Yeah. I hold them accountable.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you for taking the time with us.
Thank you for the opportunity to be with your audience and yourselves and to see you in this beautiful format. Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll make sure to put everything in the links under and so people can get more, read your books, go to your website, do the value test and just get more of this.
Get inspired.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And have a wonderful evening. I think it's evening over there.
Yeah. It is always when we talk to America.
Okay, thank you.
Ja, det var litt av en samtale. Denne gleder jeg meg til å høre igjen og igjen, for her var det mye. Dette må synke inn. Hva med deg, Monica?
Jo, jeg har faktisk aldri grått på en podcast før, men jeg synes måten han forteller historien, og det som du kan føle smerten han har sett hos andre mennesker som han har jobbet med, og kanalisering, eller jeg vet ikke hva disse ordene betyr, men jeg kunne føle hans nerver så sterkt. Og jeg må si at jeg sitter igjen med en sånn, litt sånn ydmykhet i forhold til at det så mye mellom himmel og jord som ikke forstår, og så stor potensiale. Og når vi hadde Dr. Espen på podcasten tidligere, så snakket vi jo om hvor liten prosentdel av hjernen vi bruker, kapasiteten vi har, og alt vi bærer på. Men jeg likte spesielt godt det han sa om å tro på løgnene dine, og holde på med den fantasien, når faktisk det motsatte er det som gjør deg frisk.
Jeg helt enig. Det var veldig mye her som jeg har lyst til å ta tak i. Jeg synes det skikkelig spennende å jobbe med tanker og dette med sånn disse motstridende følelsene vi har overfor andre mennesker og hva det egentlig sier om oss selv. For vi har jo alle opplevd det at du møter en person som du bare virkelig ikke liker og går litt inn i det. Det vondt, men vi har veldig godt av det for å dra dette med biohackingen litt lenger.
Ja, og du delte jo med meg nå at du har en bekjent som alvorlig syk. Og hun har hatt et tøft liv og mye som preger henne. Og så står på en måte denne personen så fast, klarer ikke å se noe annet enn den ene. Fantasien som han ville kalt det da, fordi man hele tiden skal klare å snu og så se at det noe å hente ut av at det ble sånn som det ble. Så ble jeg jo inspirert til å dele den informasjonen til enda flere, fordi det veldig mange som sliter, veldig mange som bærer på de historiene sine, inkludert oss to, Alette. Vi har jo også våre historier som vi bærer med oss, og hvor lett det ikke bare å gå inn i den fellen der, så du begynner å klandre eller tenke at det problemet der ute, når du egentlig sitter med, holdt på å si, føresettet selv, du kan kjøre den bilen i den retningen du vil, du kan ha muligheten til å endre eller tenke annerledes om din egen situasjon.
Det så riktig, og vi snakker jo så ofte om dette her, at vi kan bare forandre oss selv. Vi kan ikke forandre noen andre, så det var veldig fint at du spurte på dette i forhold til barna også, Monica, hvordan vi kan hjelpe de. Fordi det helt riktig, de har jo sine egne verdier, og det så lett at vi påfører våre ting i et eneste håp om å hjelpe. Og det tok jeg veldig til meg. Jeg tror nok jeg har gjort mye av det.
Ja, så var det egentlig kanskje ikke et håp om hjelp, men det var kanskje ikke hjelp, fordi at vi prøvde egentlig bare å fikse noen sår i oss selv. Og så tror vi at hvis vi gjør det for barna våre, så fikser vi våre egne sår. Men det tilbake til den fantasien. Det har du helt rett i. Det burde vi jobbe mye mer med. Og vi har jo tatt denne value-testen, som gratis, den ligger på hjemmesiden hans. Hvis du skal gjøre det når du hører på podcasten her, du skal lytte til episoden, så sett deg ned og bruk litt tid på det, for den var ikke komplisert sånn sett, men du måtte tenke litt, for dette jo verdiene dine, livsgrunnlaget ditt, som skal lede deg på vei til å gjøre mer av det som ditt høyeste deg da. Og der tenkte jo jeg, så jeg spurte også i episoden, hvor grensen mellom å bli helt ego og bare tenke på deg selv, skal jeg bare dure på med alt jeg liker og glemme alle andre? Men han var veldig tydelig på at han gjorde de tingene han kunne, og så outsourcet han alt andre. Og det har han blitt rik og berømt og skrevet så hundrevis av mange tekstbøker på, så det ligger kanskje noe i det. Hva tenker du om det, dette?
Du, kanskje vår lille business skal begynne med det samme. Outsource litt, og så tar vi enda mer av det vi digger å gjøre.
Men hva ble dine høyeste verdier da, hvis du bare nevner en, for jeg vet hva jeg har i mitt hjerte.
Hva tenker du med høyeste verdier?
Jeg får det den testen vi gjorde på nettsiden hans.
Ja, for meg så er det jo familie. Det kommer opp igjen og igjen at det er noe jeg ikke klarer meg uten, og som jeg setter utrolig pris på, som jeg faktisk dårlig til å ta meg av innimellom.
Nettopp, og den jeg helt enig med deg i med familie, at jeg tror kanskje jeg har lyst å ha mer tid med barna mine og de nærmeste enn det kanskje de ønsker med meg noen ganger, for de jo voksne og lever sin egne liv. Men hvis jeg bare tenker på meg selv og karrieren min og hvem jeg som person, så tror jeg kanskje at det litt mer egentid, at jeg skal være litt snillere med meg selv. Tørre og ikke alltid være flink og si litt mer nei, litt sånne ting.
Mm. Den testen synes jeg dere burde gå inn og prøve å ta, og sette den ned og tenke litt, for jeg synes det var vanskelig. Etter at vi har tatt den, så dukker det opp flere og flere ting som man kanskje kunne svart på der, og du setter i gang en tankeprosess, og jeg tror det begynnelsen på det hele, bare det å begynne.
Og jeg tror faktisk, når du sier det sånn, Alette, at jeg har lyst til å ta testen på nytt, siden vi nå har lært mer om John sin skole og filosofi nå, så føler jeg at det kanskje skjønner litt mer hva han egentlig spør om. Og neste veien jo da å kanskje bli med på en breakthrough experience. Det krever jo at du både har penger og tid å kunne reise ut i verden og bli med på dette, med mindre enn kommer til Norge da. Men jeg har deltatt på noen av disse her Tony Robbins-showene da, og det jo kjempegøy og spennende å se han live. Men jeg må innrømme at jeg alltid den som sitter bak oss da, og nærmest har en paraply over hodet og håper at ingen skal se meg, og ingen skal stille meg et eneste spørsmål, for jeg har egentlig ikke lyst til å dele noen ting. Da ble jeg den generte, skjønner du hva jeg mener?
Og jeg skjønner det så godt. Man har så lyst til å være en del av, samtidig som man orker ikke å få oppmerksomhet.
Altså, også vrenge sjelen, liksom.
Ikke i det hele tatt, men kanskje du gjør det.
Ok, dere kjære fine lyttere. Biohacking har veldig mange ansikt og veldig mange veier. Vi skal ransake sjelen vår, vi skal sørge for at vi spiser godt og beveger oss bra, og har gode og klare tanker, og ikke minst slutte å lyve for oss selv. Så Dr. John DeMartini var ukens gjest, og vi har vært innom masse forskjellige temaer, og vi håper virkelig at du fikk litt utbytte av det. Du kan lese bøkene hans, og du kan sjekke ut alt som gratis og tilgjengelig på nettet, på YouTube og på hjemmesiden, og ta nå den testen hvis du synes det gøy, og del gjerne episoden hvis du synes den verdt å gi til noen som du kanskje har noen følelser som litt uforløste med.
Ha en strålende uke! Happy biohacking.
Vi minner om at dere må snakke med egen lege eller kostholdsveileder om dietter og andre spørsmål relatert til medisiner og supplementer. Informasjon vi deler kan ikke bli brukt til å diagnostisere, behandle, forebygge eller kurere noen sykdommer eller tilstander.
Julas tilbud og spar. Julefeiringen nærmer seg med stormskritt, og nå får du hele 40% rabatt på et stort utvalg Evergood kaffe. I tillegg får du også fersk krydder av tynnribbe fra Folkets, før 149, nå kun 99 kroner per kilo. Alt i tilbud på noe godt. Hilsen oss i Spar.